Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. Eric Steven, are you there?
I am, and this is definitely not the second or third time we've tried to record
or fifth or sixth. Yeah, you went away for a little bit. Trying to. We have an extra special guest joining us today, so a little technical difficulties getting out to work, but I think we're good to go. But before we get there, just real quick, should we just talk real quick about Cody Bellinger?
Sure.
Who you snubbed last week on our episode.
That's right. I wanted to talk about
how he was the best player on the planet, best player on the team, and you were all about Joc Pederson.
I kicked him to the curb, and he responded with another week, so you're welcome, I guess.
Where he's getting this energy from, is spiting you.
So just to get this out of the way, Cody Bellinger currently on pace for 113 home runs, 292 RBIs. So
sustainable.
Looking pretty good. You said you're going to Thursday's game, right?
In St. Louis, correct.
Yeah, so that's four games from now. If Cody Bellinger hits a home run in the first three games of that series, when you go to the field on Thursday, he'll be on pace for 99.7 home runs.
Well, so he better hit two then.
Yeah, just to be safe.
I want that 100 mark.
Absolutely.
Well, do you want to go ahead and introduce our guest?
Sure. So this week, it's not just Jacob and I. We are proud to welcome the managing editor of True Blue LA, Liz Eastless. Liz, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Sure. Liz took over at the site in the last month or so, and we're just going to get to know her a little better. She's, from what I've seen so far, she's been doing a great job. She's far more organized than I was when I was running the site, so that's a plus in my book.
Cody Bellinger as her player of the series. I want to point out.
Just before that, though, I just want to say, think of this as the best new artist Grammy. It doesn't necessarily portend future greatness. It's it's more of a shot in time. Like the Beatles didn't win best new artist Grammy, so
Milli Vanilli did.
Right. And well, first of all, that was an awesome album. But anyway, so are you saying that Joc Pederson lip-synced in the first weekend of the season?
I absolutely am.
Okay, that's fair. Well, he didn't have a hit this last week, so perhaps you're onto something.
Just like Milli Vanilli.
So, back to Liz for a second. Liz, you are currently a student at USC, right?
Yes, it's correct.
Okay, so what is your history with the Dodgers? Like, did you grow up a Dodger fan? Like, when did you start liking them? And what's your history with the team?
Yeah, so I was, as cliche as it sounds, born bleeding blue.
Uh-huh.
I guess I shouldn't say that now as I'm a journalist, but I don't know. I can just never hide the fact that I love the Dodgers. And so it goes back in my family roots. My dad grew up in the 80s, became a really big fan of Fernando Valenzuela. And my grandpa and my dad both together became Dodgers fans. And so when I was born up in Northern California, actually, I grew up in Giants territory. Uh-huh. It was not the funnest experience. But so I grew up a Dodgers fan for my whole life. And my fandom really grew at the end of middle school, the beginning of high school. And I know you guys are going to laugh, but this is like, my first year of watching every single game was in 2013.
wait, and you were in high school at this time or junior high?
Yes, I was in high school.
Oh, that's crushing. Yeah, that is absolutely crushing. But no, it's fine. That's pretty good. Okay. Do you have brothers and sisters? Were they also Dodger fans? Did they help indoctrinate you, or was it more like your older relatives?
It was definitely more of my my dad's influence. I just grew up in a household where ESPN was on all the time. Mm-hmm. So there was no other option for me of teams to like, because it was just ingrained in my brain. I do have an older sister. Shout out to my sister, Monica. She's about to graduate from San Diego State.
Oh, nice.
With a major in athletic training.
Oh, sweet.
So, yeah, another sports track in the East Los family. And I have a little brother who's actually 7. I think mm-hmm. he's 7. He might be 8. I'm not sure. but, yeah, he's a little Dodger fan up in NorCal. So
now, you're, you know, being up in Northern California and in Giants country, where, like, I know nowadays it's a lot easier to – you know, watch games of teams when you're not in the market, but like, how did you keep up with the Dodgers, like doing that?
So it's a little interesting. So I have a lot of family down in Los Angeles. And so my dad used their address so we could get LA channels. So we watched all of the KCAL, all of the Prime Ticket back when we were on those channels. It was great.
The fact that you said Prime Ticket, like completely, it helps me deal with the fact that you were in high school in 2013. So, like, it helps me cope a little better with that. So that's good. So you're watching Dodger games. You're in Northern California, and then now you're in Los Angeles at USC. Have you just relished in the chance of getting to go to more games? Have you taken advantage of that, or just being around? Like, what has that been like for you?
It's definitely nicer to like wear Dodger gear. I feel safer. I know I know I won't be attacked as much for, you know, wearing a Dodger blue shirt. In fact, people will, you know, give me high fives if they see me around the area, and you know, people are friendly, whereas in NorCal, I would just get, oh my God, Dodgers suck. Lots of Giants hats up there. It was a rough upbringing. But I actually went to Cal State Fullerton for my freshman year. Mm-hmm. And I took the Metrolink to Union Station often. It was like a little bit of a longer trek from Fullerton to Dodger Stadium than it is from USC. It's only 6 miles away from where I live now, mm-hmm. which is nice. I have gone to several. I haven't counted, but I would say at least 15 to 20 in my my college career. I'm about to finish up my junior year. Okay. So not half bad. Could be better. It will be better this summer.
I have to say, you're a junior in college, so you have like a normal like college workload, and you're running the site, so you're putting in. That's a lot of work. Like, how do you sort of manage the time there?
So, it's been a little hard, like, getting into the groove of things. But as you mentioned earlier, I'm very organized. So I created a schedule, and it kind of just helps me visualize when I'll need to be writing and when I'll need to, like, when the games are, so that I can dedicate that time to True Blue LA, and whatever gaps I have, I'll study. Been a lot of long nights, but sure. I figure that my finals week is on like the first week of May, so I only have a few weeks of sleepless nights, and I'm sure I'll get through it just fine.
Yeah, that's the best part about baseball being in the summer, is there's usually no school, and you know, if you're, once you get older, then you might have another job while you're also doing it or whatever, but still you have a good head on your shoulders in terms of like managing your time, so that's pretty strong.
Thank you.
I would say on the MetroLink, I don't know if you've ever done this, but you're in Fullerton, so the MetroLink also has a drop off like right in the parking lot of Angel Stadium. Mm-hmm. And it very rarely are the Angels and Dodgers home at the same time, but occasionally they are. And I want to say like 5-6 years ago or something, my brother and I, we did a Angel day game followed by a Dodger night game, and we took the train up there. It was pretty awesome. But it is like kind of a trek, you know, but it was, in terms of seeing like two games in one day, it was definitely the way to do it. So anyone who gets a chance to do that, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, and you don't have to sit in traffic. That sounds nice.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Okay, before we get back to Dodger stuff, so you're at USC, and you don't have to answer this, but do you think Lynn Swann should resign, be fired? It's kind of a mess over there right now. What are your thoughts on the whole thing?
You know what? I think I might have to keep my mouth shut.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because I am an employee of USC Athletics.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's completely understandable. I apologize for putting you on.
What if I totally stop fine. The recording?
Yeah, right.
No, I wouldn't do that.
That's fine. Sorry about that. But
no, you're fine.
Okay. So back to the Dodgers for a second. When you went to the Friday game against the Diamondbacks, the second game of the season, and you covered that game, was that your first game covering the Dodgers? And like what, the previous times were just in the stands?
Yep. It was okay, my first time in the press box.
And it went 6 hours.
But your second game.
Yeah, right. You basically like covered like my dream scenario of a game in terms of endless baseball, and you got it on your first time. How would you describe that game?
It was definitely an experience, with it also being my first time, in the clubhouse with a credential. I got there pretty early, and I was still trying to figure out how things go. I was a lost puppy that day. I didn't know where the clubhouse was. I didn't know how to get to the field. I didn't know where the elevators were. I didn't know that I could go to the kitchen and grab a Dodger dog. It was an interesting experience, but luckily I was able to meet some people that were sitting around me, and everybody was pretty excited about the fact that it was my first game, and they wanted me to come back very soon, because then who knows what'll happen next time that I come.
You're the good luck charm, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's been just one lucky game. So hopefully I'll see if I can go to the series against the Brewers. But
sure. Now, I think I mentioned this to you while you were at that game or as it was going on, but that I have always just sort of made known that I wanted to cover like a 20-inning game. I was at the 18-inning World Series game, so that was like close enough. But like every time I bring this up, almost like all the veteran like reporters, they all like want to murder me within like a minute. And so But it's sort of a joking thing right now, but they're very mad when I bring this up. Did you experience, not necessarily towards you, but were, did you see like complaints about how long the game was going, anything like that?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Everybody was tired. The morale in the press box was down. It was pretty uneventful there for a few several innings. I was also extremely tired. You know, I had homework to do, but I just decided to enjoy the ball game and, talk to fellow reporters, and they talked a lot about, other games they've covered that lasted really long, and it was fun. It was a good time.
Yeah. At a certain point, you're just like kind of along for the ride, and you just forget about what you're writing about, it seems like. And then you're just like, well, it's going to end somehow. We'll figure it out. But yeah, like you really can't like commit to writing something like during those extra innings, because it could change anyway. So like you can't get any like prep work done that you haven't already done. So it's like very odd. You're just sort of waiting for something to happen. And then it's very weird, but that's good. That was a nice first game in the press box for you.
Yeah.
That was a good experience.
One for the history books.
Absolutely. Should we just go right into like this, like the last week or so for the Dodgers? Like, what do they do? Or
kind of sum up the team a little bit, because most of these games have been pretty samey. Real quick, I just wanted to apologize that the podcast got out a little bit late last week. The editing took 6 to 7 times longer than it normally does. So even though it came out on Thursday, we didn't actually cover the series against the Giants, but we can go ahead and do that now. So we've had the series against the Giants and the home opening series for the Rockies, and the series looked, especially after the sort of the early parts of the Giants series, have looked largely the same. The Dodgers get out to really big leads. The bullpen is kind of shaky, but it ends up really not mattering, and the stakes are never really there for the bullpen. Kind of got there when Kenley got in the game, but not really. Should we start with the offense? We should talk about the bullpen and how there's some confidence issues there, but there's just so many gaudy stats you can talk about. Cody Bellinger obviously leads the charge, but I'm looking at it. There are two Dodger players and all of batters, I should say, so non-pitchers, that have a on-base below 360. Two. And that includes the bench, and that includes all starters. That's crazy to me. Even small sample size.
Right. AJ Pollock's at 326, and even that is like, it's like completely fine.
Yeah.
You know, like, but yeah, everyone else is great. Like, the Dodgers as a team have a 403 on base percentage right now. So that's kind of ridiculous. So, I mean, look, it's like we talked about this, it's only 10 games. So, like, you know, things happen over a short
period
of time. But
any 10-game stretch, not just to start the season, where you have 10 games where a team is getting on base 40% of the time. That's crazy.
And almost slugging 600.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Cody Bellinger is slugging. I don't know how you say it out loud. He's slugging 1,023, at this point. So it's pretty ridiculous.
That's nuts. And in the most recent series against Colorado, the Dodgers scored 29 runs. And even though they are in Colorado and Coors Field, that's still a crazy amount of runs to score in 3 games.
Yeah, I mean, like it seems like no matter where they are, what they're doing, like they keep scoring. I always, going into Coors Field is always weird, because like it seems like anything could happen, and like your entire bullpen could be used up and screwed up for like a week after, and I think you just try to get through those series sometimes because they're weird. But like the way the Dodgers are scoring, it just didn't matter. Like they just kept winning. Like, and they've beaten the Rockies now like 8 straight times. I mean, it helped them win. They only won the division by a game last year, which was against the Rockies in the tiebreaker game. But like that helped them win the division last year. And now they're off to a hot start. So like, man, like we said, it's only 10 games, but this is like the best possible start I think they could have had, like just in terms of how they look so far.
So we'll talk about the best possible start they could have had, maybe hinges on one pitcher. But real quick, Bill Chaiken tweeted out that the Dodgers have 80, they've scored 84 runs in the first 10 games, whereas the Padres have 35, the Angels have 32, and the Giants have 25. And that just puts it on the scale of 80, like the numbers are so big that it's easy to just kind of get lost in how crazy they are. But when you put them next to some other teams, and granted, a couple of those teams aren't looking so hot, but the Padres have started out really well, and they may be the Dodgers' main competition, if there exists one, for the division. So the fact that they've more than doubled the scoring output through 10 games really says something.
And just to add to this Dodgers-Giants sort of stat, the Giants, you said, right, have scored 25 runs in their 10 games. The Dodgers have hit 24 home runs. So, like, they almost caught them in runs, in just home runs. So that's kind of amazing.
So should we talk about the poll? Do anyone else have any gaudy offensive stats we want to throw out before we get to, you know, the sort of the gray lining?
I'll give you, I have a couple. So the Dodgers, they've scored 84 runs in 10 games. The Mariners are like almost keeping pace with them. They actually have more home runs. They played one more game, but like, but in terms of the Dodgers, the 84 runs in 10 games since like 1901, that's basically baseball's like modern era, before they played like in backyards on a lot somewhere, you know, with like an whipple ball bat or something.
Some
I don't know.
Yeah.
But you're right. And so in the modern era, only two teams have scored more in their first 10 games than the Dodgers. The 32 Yankees scored 90 runs, and the 99 Indians, which they were always loaded back then, they scored 87 runs. So like, think about that, like all of baseball history, basically the Dodgers are like scoring to start the season off at least at an unprecedented rate. And like we mentioned, it's just the start of the season, but like, so last year, there were only two 10-game stretches at any point during the season, which teams scored 84, and nobody scored more last year. And one of them was by the Dodgers, and the other was by the Red Sox, and they both made the World Series. So, like, I'm not saying, like, it guarantees anything, obviously, but, like, that's
it. Guarantees it.
Yeah, let's just say that. And then, so the other part, too, is, look, the home runs, you know, we mentioned, and home runs have this weird stigma that, when a team's scoring well, that people like try to poke holes in things, and they say, you know, well, the team's too reliant on home runs, as if like that was not a bad thing to have, you know, or I don't know. It's weird. They just downplay it. But also, so the Dodgers had 24 home runs through 10 games. Only two teams have beaten that ever. And the 28 was by the 2000 Cardinals. So they're like really good there, but I would say the fact that the Dodgers are not, they're just not only scoring with home runs. They've scored 35 runs with their 24 home runs. So, you know, some guys on base here and there, but that leaves 49 other runs to account for. So like, even if you take away all the home runs and the runs they brought in, the Dodgers are still averaging basically 5 runs a game. And that's with no home runs. So like, their offense is like clicking at its highest possible gear right now.
Well, that leads to the downsides, and that's the bullpen, which I think has looked as better. Is that fair to say that it's looked better over the last few games? Not every pitcher has, mind you, but it's been a little bit brighter, but still pretty darn shaky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like the thing with the bullpen, like overall, it's been pretty bad, but it's like almost concentrated in like maybe 3 pitchers, like, so.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all, these are all like fixable things, I think, or at least two of them are. Brock Stewart, you know, only really pitched mop up style and like didn't do well, so he was optioned out Sunday.
That's they brought up Dennis
right, and so they brought up Dennis Santana. I mean, he's basically there for long innings or whatever. But then like the other two, Joe Kelly, who's like their, you know, they signed to be their main setup man, has been bad. He's allowed runs in like 3 of his 4 games, and the other game that he only faced one batter because he got hit in the wrist. So it's been like a really like bad start for him. But the other, like the other main problem, or I don't know if it's a main problem, but the other problem is Yimi Garcia. He's allowed runs in 5 of his 6 games. And I look like going, he had a streak last year of like 7 straight appearances with a run. So like he's allowed runs in 13 of his last 16 appearances, and he doesn't pitch like long, you know, outings. So during that time, he has like a 10.2 ERA, and he's allowed 7 home runs and in only like 12 innings. So he doesn't have options, but I think once like Rich Hill or Clayton Kershaw, whichever one's back first, I think Yimmy is like probably going to be designated for assignment, or just he's going to be one of the guys to go because he just hasn't really done much. And so I think, you know, Kelly, obviously they have to figure him out, but like in terms of the rest of it, I think once you get like, say, Julio Urias pitching those innings in the bullpen and Ross Stripling eventually, once like the rotation is back in order, I think then it becomes stronger and it will help. But so that's the, I guess if there's a downside, at least it's a fixable downside to me.
Yeah. And I think they've been taking steps. As you mentioned, Santana got recalled and he had a great outing on Sunday against the Rockies. He only gave up a run in 2 2/3 of an inning. And Joe Kelly, it seems, yesterday he got on Sunday, he was given the victory in the game against the Rockies. He didn't look great, but again, the Dodgers offense just is so on fire that the Dodger bats saved him. He did give up 2 earned runs. His ERA is 14.40, which is not great for a reliever. But I think
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not great for any pitcher.
Yeah. but I think things are starting to – Roberts is starting to kind of figure it out. But as you'd mentioned, Eric – It's definitely going to be a lot better once the starting rotation is back in order.
Yeah, and then I guess one other positive on the bullpen, there's been some positives, but Kenley Jansen has looked really good, and he pitched very effectively in Denver on Saturday. He got a 4-out save, and like everyone was worried because like his entire career, every time he's had like heart issues, it's been like in Denver. And then he had the surgery in the offseason to sort of correct that, and like he looked absolutely fine. So like that was pretty cool. So like from a health standpoint and just from Kenley being effective, that's been a real positive. And also Kenley Jansen got to bat in that game on Saturday. He got to stand in the batter's box. They weren't really letting him swing, but he did take 6 pitches and struck out. But I think it was pretty solid.
Yeah, and to go off of what you had mentioned about his irregular heartbeats in Denver, Pedro Mora tweeted that Kenley Jansen has been drinking 7 liters of water per day in Denver. His doctor advised him to drink a lot. So I think
seven
liters. I think it's safe to say he was a little bit worried.
Wow. That's a lot. Like I go through phases where I drink a lot of water, but like that 7 is like too much. Like it's just like, I think I top out at like 4 maybe on a very heavy water, heavy day. 7 is a lot. That's impressive.
But it worked for him. He got that 4-out save on Saturday.
He just had the really sure. Key. He had to get out of there.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Well, Liz, I can't thank you enough for joining. Thank you, for like what you're bringing to the site so far. I think it's been going great. We're happy to have you on the podcast, and I'm sure we'll have you on again. Thanks so much for everything, and we'll talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks guys for having me.
Well, I'm glad we were able to get her on.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. We don't have a ton of guests on this show, a lot. So it's always good to sort of go out of our norm, because it was really good. She brought a lot to the table, and we're glad to have her at the site.
Yeah, it puts less on our plate, so we can do the what we like doing best, which is tell bad jokes. I laugh at them. It'll be good.
Well,
you know what else we like to do?
Yeah. Well, you know what do we like to do? I don't.
We love answering questions from our good friend Craig Manami.
That's absolutely true. And I just want to say, let's just say good jokes. There's no such thing as a bad joke or a bad pun.
We have 5 questions from Craig. The first one is, sure, it's small sample size, but I'd like the two of you to pick how many of the current rate stats, and he's got 3 for us, are most likely to happen for the rest of the season. You ready? The Dodgers continue to average two doubles a game. As to give us some context, 2017 Dodgers averaged almost two, 1.97, and 2018 averaged 1.82. So do you think the 2019 Dodgers will average two or more doubles a game?
I don't think that, but
too many home runs.
unless they like stop at second and just go, you know, I'm good after hitting it over the fence. They just like, I want to try for the cycle today. I know I'm going to hit another home run, so I'll just stop at second on this one. No, yeah, I think they'll probably fall just short of that.
Yeah, somewhere between those two numbers sounds right to me. Next, and this is where this will be interesting. 5.6 walks per game. The highest rate ever was in 2000 with 4.12, and the 2017 average 4, and then 2018, big dip, 3.18.
Yeah, I think they'll set a franchise record for walks per game this year.
That's kind of how I wanted to put it. Like, because 5.6 seems too high to me, but I also think they have a really good shot at setting the record.
Right. So I think that that's a very good possibility.
So the next one, it's what we've been talking about most of the episode: home runs per game. They're currently averaging 2.4 per game. The franchise record was last year 1.44. So he's just going wants to know if 2019 will continue this trend and break the record.
So I do 235 home runs is a lot, right? That's what they had last year. That that was the franchise record. It led the National League. It didn't lead the majors because the Yankees over in the American League set a major league record with home runs. So the Yankees hit last year. They hit 267. Just to give you perspective, that is 1.65 per game. So when the Dodgers at 2.4, that's just like, it just can't be kept up, you know? Like, that's not possible. The Dodgers, in their franchise record last year, and they did play the extra game, they were 1.44. Mm-hmm. I think they're in that, like, they're probably good for, like, 240 at least, and maybe more. So I do think they'll set a franchise record. I don't know if they'll break the major league record, but I think that's wrong. Of the three that Craig asked, like, I think they're most likely to set the franchise walk record. Maybe not, obviously not at the current pace, but then the home run record, I would say they're likely to, but just given the fact it's relatively high and they just set it last year, maybe that's a hard number to beat. So over the course of the season, so that's the only pause I have.
I will say I'm a little more bullish on the home run record than you.
Sure,
I'm not saying it's a lock by any stretch, but I think they will.
So before we go to the next question for this, I had a couple notes, and this sort of ties into that. The Dodgers, as a team, franchise record for home runs in April, and this is in quotes April because any March games count for April in terms of like baseball splits or whatever. So, and this year was obviously different because they played four games in March. So in 2000, the Dodgers hit 41 home runs in April. They only played 24 games because it was just that they started later those years. So the Dodgers already have 24. So like it's a very safe bet. They still have 22 games left in the month. So for them to hit 17 more to tie the record, I think that's a very, very safe bet. It's very possible if the Dodgers in their next 14 games can hit those 17 home runs, they can match that that 2000 number in the same number of games. So I think that they're gonna break their April record for home runs. They might in April break their overall record for home runs, which was set last year. So which is in the 50s. So this is the big month. The other thing to look out for April is Matt Kemp. He hit 12 home runs in 23 games in 2012 in April. Cody Bellinger, with the benefit of March, has the four extra games, but he's at seven. And so, you know, there's 22 games left in April for the Dodgers. So if he can hit five more home runs, he'd match Kemp. Obviously, there's more games, but hey, that's the nature of the business.
I'm excited to see him do it in my game on Thursday.
So he's going to hit, let's say he'll hit four home runs in the first three games of the series. That's a conservative estimate. Mm-hmm. And then he gets like three in your game.
And he hands me the bat. It's gonna be great.
That's right.
I'm really looking.
Well, because he gives you the bat because you give him two of the balls that you caught for the home runs. So
well,
pretty amazing.
If I'm catching balls, they're fouls. I'll be sitting pretty close to the Dodgers dugout. Am I heading to the outfield just during his at bats?
Yes, you're gonna be walking the stadium and then on the concourse, he's gonna hit it over the stands. I'm assuming. Or maybe you're just going to be – do they still have Big Mac Land? Oh, okay. Man. So, you know what? Just to be safe, you should go to the arch. Go to the arch when he bats, and then it's a very possibility you're going to get at least one home run ball.
The franchise record is 8 Dodgers scoring 70 runs in a season. The 2017 team had 5 players do it. How many Dodgers will score 70 or more runs this season?
So that's, 5 is tough. I think it's more likely that they sort of do something like that because they have a more of a set lineup this year, at least to start. Mm-hmm. You know, Corey Seager's back, so he's the everyday shortstop. Justin Turner, obviously, at third. Cody Bellinger's going to play, whether it's right field or first base, depending on how they maneuver stuff. And then AJ Pollock's basically every day. Obviously, he's been injured a lot. And so that's sort of the only thing that keeps him off the field. And so I think there's a chance for them to sort of do that. Justin Turner's missed time with injury the last few years. So that's a possibility too. So it makes it difficult. I think it's a good chance they do get the 5 though. So I will say, I don't know if they're going to get like more than that because it's difficult. Maybe Kike, if he could still, you know, he's been playing a lot too. Maybe he could do it. But I think it's a good chance they get those 5 again.
The next question we kind of already covered. He wants to know if Cody Bellinger can set the record for home runs in April. So if we don't count March, do you think he can get it?
So he's at 3 home runs in April,
mm-hmm.
and there are 22 games left. He certainly can. Like he would have to hit 9 to tie. I just don't think it's likely. So I think let's say even if you go, if someone hits a home run like every 3 games, they're like it's a 54 home run pace for the season. So if he hits 7 in the last 22 games, like that's basically a 50 homer pace, and that's very good. And that would only give him 10 for April. So I don't think he's gonna break it just in April. I think he will break it using March and April.
Okay. Yeah. It seems like a pretty darn good bet.
One other Cody Bellinger note: he was named the National League Player of the Week today. So,
shocker. Are you sure?
He was.
Are you sure it wasn't Josh Peterson?
That's right.
I like Josh Peterson. I'm being so mean.
Christian Yelich won it last week, and Cody Bellinger and Josh Peterson were named as other noteworthy performers. So. Clearly, you know, Jock Peterson's greatness was not understated.
All right. This is the question you've been looking forward to, and I know that. Best canned or bottled iced tea, Snapple, Arizona Lipton, etc., and any particular flavors you like?
I absolutely have a favorite here. So he mentioned brands, right? Like, I'm almost okay with most brands. Like, my go-to flavor, I will say, is peach.
Okay.
If I have to have a flavored iced tea, so if I'm at home and I go to the grocery store, they have the Arizona like gallon jug, and they have no sugar peach iced tea, which is great. I like that a lot, and I use that sometimes. But I also have bought like bags and make it myself. But in terms of the best, I would say this. So from going to Arizona a lot, I stopped at QT, which was like a quick trip. Yeah,
they're based in, I think Tulsa is their base, but they have
okay.
lots and lots in Missouri and Kansas. So is my go-to convenience store.
I grew up with 7-Eleven and AMPM, and like while those are they're more traditional, I think, convenience stores. But like these are almost like expanded like super convenience stores in a way because they offer so much and a lot of prepared food as well. So that was my go-to stop forever in spring training. And they have bottled iced tea that's 2 for $2 or like $1.39 each or something. And I would grab those like in the morning and take them to wherever I was. And but yeah, they have a QT unsweetened peach iced tea that was excellent. It is excellent. That's probably my favorite. Other than that, it's probably like the Arizona one if I'm going local.
Well, you know what my favorite brand of iced tea is?
But
Coca-Cola. I really do not like iced tea. Hot tea I can be okay with, and maybe it's I really like Pu'er tea, which I think you can maybe make iced, but certainly Snapple and Arizona aren't going to have iced Pu'er tea. So if they ever do that, maybe I'll come around, but generally don't like it. But boy, do I love cola tea. Can we call it that?
Sure. So I'm assuming what you're drinking now is not only Coke Zero, but Cherry Coke Zero.
You are
correct. Is that correct?
The greatest of flavors.
They just, Coke has been advertising this recently. They just added like orange vanilla Coke.
Yeah, I've seen that. It sounds gross to me.
I didn't realize it was also, I was at my cousin's yesterday and we got to talk about this. She had Cherry Coke Zero as well. And I'll say this. So my cousin is a commercial baker. She makes cakes for like weddings and events and things, and she's very awesome at it. They're like amazingly decorated. But she has like a commercial fridge in her garage because she like bakes a lot of stuff at home. She one of the rooms in her house that was converted into another like commercial kitchen, so it's pretty great. But so she has a lot of stuff in that fridge out in the garage, and she had some Coke Zero, Cherry Coke Zero out there yesterday, and I grabbed one, but as it was like on the top shelf. And as I grabbed it, like it was in the 12-pack sleeve or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that like started the dam breaking and like three of them like flew out. But the best was that they landed. But they didn't land on the ground. They landed in the box of eggs because she buys eggs by the box, you know, because she uses them so often. But I just remember it was like a scene from it was like almost the I Love Lucy infection scene. Kind of thing. Yeah. And so I was like, oh no. And then all of a sudden it's like, crack, crack, crack. And then like they all landed on the egg. So it was like this mess of like, but it didn't get it. It was like well contained within the box. It was a very easy cleanup. But I was just like laughing. I was like, this is ridiculous. But so I had that, but she was mentioning the orange vanilla. I said, do they even make it in diet? That's where she's like, speak of the devil, I have some orange vanilla Coke Zero. So she gave me one. I've never tried it. I took it home and I saved for the podcast. So as you opened yours, I'm opening mine right now.
Okay. Oh yeah. So good sound.
We'll see how good. I'm generally not an orange vanilla fan. I like orange.
I like creamsicles a lot, but whenever they've tried to translate it to almost anything else, not a fan.
I'm same here. So I'm trying it right now.
I'm really excited for this verdict.
I didn't expect to like it, but it's better than I expected. I'm not fully on board yet, but I haven't finished the can. But like, it's good. It's like I almost wish they just made like just orange Coke Zero, like regular like that.
So,
but it's a
so
good
how,
taste.
How vanilla orangey is it versus cola-y is it?
So I've never been like a cream soda guy, and it that's what turns me off. And so there's enough of a hint to where I'm like, I'm not going to drink a lot of this, but it's pretty good. Like it's not like I could mix it in every once in a while. It's not bad.
All right, rotation player.
Right, exactly.
That you know, a lot of major leaguers would kill for that. So
yep.
Last question. I've joked about Mike Trout being the best player in my lifetime in either the major league in the major league in MLB, NBA, or NFL that I might watch play the least in his career. In your time watching sports, who is the one great player that you think you never got to see play?
So he mentioned sports, so I'm not necessarily limiting this to baseball.
I might, and that's only because I would go to in both the NBA and the NFL, I'm a fan of the Indiana sports team, a Colts fan,
sure.
A Pacers fan, and Laker tickets tended to be expensive, so I would go to a Laker-Pacers game every 3 years, and I would frequently go to the Clippers-Pacers game, but that's it. And there weren't a lot of greats on the Clippers, so and even my beautiful, beautiful Pacers, you know, I got to see, in terms of an all-time great, Reggie Miller, and then you can make an argument down the line for Paul George. So in basketball and in football, and honestly, even in hockey, there's probably a lot of greats I didn't get to see play. So I might have to limit myself to baseball, and I have to do some thinking.
Now, I was going to ask, do you think Craig meant see in person or just see?
That's what
in
I
general?
Assume. That's what I assume.
Okay, good, because if it's just see in person, the regret I have is never seeing Magic Johnson play. I watched countless number of games on TV and was a huge fan, but I just never went to a Laker game growing up.
Laker
so,
tickets are not cheap.
Right. And so, like, the time, I think the first time I went to a Laker game was like 94, 95. That was in between, you know, Magic and then his sort of return the next year. But so I never got to see him play in person. I regret he's my all-time favorite athlete. So it's that. If we're just going baseball, off the top of my head, it's probably like Tom Seaver or something like that. But that's, I'm just sort of guessing at this point. Like, but yeah, that's a good question. You know, maybe going further back, I guess he was never active when I was alive, so this doesn't count. But like Wilt Chamberlain, I would have loved to see him play. Just the mismatch of it, you know, like how huge he was and like overpowering.
Because one of the things that I've always considered myself fairly lucky is. Two players that came to mind when I thought I would think of this question a lot over the last few years and over the last decade, I thought, oh, I'm never going to see Greg Maddux or Roger Clemens pitch. And then I got to see each of them pitch. I actually saw was Greg Maddux's last game. It was was I think game 5 in one of the NCLS in NLCSs against the Phillies. I think he did mop-up duty in the 3-error Rafael Furcal game, and I was there for that. It was the
nice
silver lining of that, and I got to see Roger Clemens had, I think, one start in Dodger Stadium in that last season, and I was there for that. So,
did I go to that game with you? Was that a Dodger Thoughts game?
That might have been. I was in the bleachers.
Okay, maybe not.
Okay.
But
we might have been both there.
You know what? I was at that game with my brothers, so yeah, I remember that too. You mentioned the Clippers in sort of that going to Pacers Clippers stuff. Just shout out real quick to Ralph Lawler, who's retiring at the end of the season. The Clippers are in the playoffs, so he has a little bit going on, but that's one of the great sort of announcers. He's been announcing forever, and he like very rarely misses a game. And
gave us Lawler's Law.
Also, Lawler's Law, bingo. Oh my, you know, like they're not Dick Enberg. Oh my, I think it's his thing. But also shout out to him. He lives like in like Palm Desert area, or, you know, right out of Palm Springs, and he commutes to Clippers games. So good on him. I respect it.
Well, oh wait, no, I was about to wrap us up, but you in the last 10 minutes before we recorded, put together a Dodgers rewind, didn't you?
I did. I will say this. I don't want to go too deep behind the curtain, but let's just assume we have all this meticulously planned out. And this has been thought about for weeks. I sometimes, as was the case this week, I'm like, oh yeah, I need to come up with a Dodgers rewind like roughly 10 minutes before we start recording. And So we're talking about Cody Bellinger's hot start. He has 7 home runs already in quote unquote April. So I looked at like the Dodgers who had 7 home runs in April before, and there's not actually a ton because it's a pretty high number. But like the one that stood out as the most obscure was Franklin Stubbs. 1987, he had exactly 7 home runs in April. He played 22 games. He had 6 home runs in the first like 16 games. I want to say at some point, I think Stubbs was leading the majors, if not the National League, in home runs at like whatever that day that was. It was like a Sunday game or something. He hit 2 home runs. And I just remember that. I'm like, dang, this is weird. Like, he obviously didn't end up doing much with it. This was in 1987. The Dodgers were in the second straight like 89 loss year. It sort of made them overhaul the team a little bit, which is what fueled the 88 World Series run. But so he was playing a lot. He ended up hitting 16 home runs the whole year. So he only hit 9 after April, to give you an idea. But I just thought he was one of those guys, you know, I don't want to say what kind of was like people knew about park factors, but maybe not as much as they do now back then. But he was one of those guys who dominated the Albuquerque and like didn't. He was like a decent hitter in the majors, but almost slightly average for his career. But like, never really translated. He had some really good years in Albuquerque, but it didn't really translate. He was first round pick in 82 out of Virginia Tech. And he ended up playing for the Dodgers for 6 years, including, for the 88 team. He started at first base all five games of the World Series that year. He was 5-for-17 with two doubles, so he had a pretty decent series. Played a little bit of outfield, too. His best year was, like, right after he left the Dodgers. He went to Houston in 1990. He hit 23 home runs. He had a 124 OPS plus. He actually had a higher OPS plus with the Dodgers in 89, but he had only had like 120 plate appearances. He wasn't really playing a lot. That's part of the reason they shipped him. But he was pretty productive, like not terribly great or anything, but just one of those players that was kind of like along for the ride and did some things occasionally, including that big April in 1987. So the other thing I would say, he coached in the minors for the Dodgers from 2009 to 2015, mostly like hitting coach, things like that. He did all the three main levels, from Rancho to Chattanooga at the time, which was Double A, and then Albuquerque, and then they switched to Oklahoma City. So he's still a coach in the majors. He's coaching for Hillsboro this year, and I meant to look this up beforehand, but I'm looking it up now. So I forgot what's their so they're a Diamondbacks. So he's been with the Diamondbacks now for a couple of years since he left the Dodgers, coaching in their minors. So that's what's going on with Stubbs now. But yeah, he was a Dodger and part of the 88 team. So always sort of connected to them in that way. But yeah, hot April for him in 1987.
Well, hopefully Cody Bellinger doesn't fall off like he did. I have some confidence in Cody.
Well, I will say this. So like, you know, Cody hit 39 home runs in his rookie year. And like Stubbs in his best two Dodger years combined for 39 home runs. So I think I'm comfortable saying that Cody Bellinger is already better than Franklin Stubbs was. So, I guess that's as good a note as any to go out on. Cody Bellinger still on fire, still on pace for triple digits and home runs, which will surely hold up over the whole year.
If not increase.
After the St. Louis series for sure. Thanks to Liz Islas who was on. And thanks for your work at True Blue LA. And we'll see you next week. Thanks, everybody.